You've been a busy boy the last couple of weeks, haven't you, Glenn?
I have.
Draft of a book, editing a film.
Oh, I know. I'm Mr. Multimedia at the moment.
Very
busy.
You actually got a job. You got a proper job.
Yeah, I have a full-time job as well. I don't have any time for family or stuff like that, you know, all that irrelevant stuff. It's all...
Are they actually still there?
Work.
Have you looked to see if they're still there?
I think they left me about 2 months ago.
Yeah, quite.
And I haven't even noticed.
No. I'd notice, because if my wife disappeared, who would cook my tea for me?
Well, I always do the cooking as well, so I'm, you know, I never have any downtime.
You're completely self-sufficient then.
Yeah, totally. I need to be careful, actually. I might burn out. You never know.
Oh, sorry, the idea of that is hilarious.
So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, where we talk about things in Wiltshire that are hidden, relatively speaking, of course. My name is Glyn Coy, and I am the face of the Hidden Wiltshire Project. And with me, of course, I have my usual podcasting partner.
Paul Timlett, bag carrier.
Yes, but you can't carry my bags at the moment because you're not in Wiltshire, are you?
No. So this is our normal section the last 2 weeks in Wiltshire is going to be quite difficult because I haven't been there for 2 weeks. So I have no idea what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah. And as well as that, I haven't actually been out in Wiltshire that much.
That's because you've been
doing
all these projects, haven't you?
I know, I've got so many projects on the go at the moment. I got a bee in my bonnet about doing this second Hidden Wiltshire book, and I actually wanted to do it last year. And I thought last year with the lockdown I'd have plenty of time to do it, and of course I didn't. And it slipped by, and then we got into doing the podcast, and it kind of, just got in the way, really. But yeah, I got a renewed vigour for book writing a few weeks ago, so I got stuck into Hidden Wiltshire Book 2.
Yeah, so we're looking at the first draft or the second draft we're going through at the moment. But,
first draft.
Yeah, first draft. It's looking bloody impressive, if I may say so.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a joint effort, this one. So going back through the archives, because the last book was done 2018, so this is the last 3 years really. So going back through the archives, picking up some of your stuff, putting some of my stuff in there, and kind of creating a new sort of narrative structure around some of the photos and stuff. So, we're planning to get that out in December, before Christmas. So, gives everyone something to look forward to.
Christmas gifts. Put it on your list for Santa.
I know. We're talking about Christmas already.
Oh, God, don't. Well, that started in about August, didn't it? I think that's when Waitrose first sort of puts Christmassy stuff in their stores.
Yeah. Yeah, just before the kids go back to school, it's Christmas then.
Time for Christmas, and I've seen some. I'll explain in a minute why I'm not in Wiltshire, but I've already seen full-on Christmas adverts on the TV. I mean, there should be a law against it. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Especially if you're as miserable as I am. So you haven't been out. You haven't done any walks. You haven't taken any photographs.
No, I haven't. Not for the last 2 weeks. Oh, I'm feeling caged, actually. I'm going to head out this weekend, actually. I'm going to go out on a big, long 10-miler. Probably on Saturday I'll do that.
Yeah.
Might do the Great Ridge, actually.
Yeah, that would be a good walk to do. What, the walk that I posted, or...?
I
thought you'd done that one.
No, I hadn't. I've never done it.
Okay.
I've danced around the edges of it, but never gone, and followed the whole route through the wood.
Well, the wood, it'll just now be starting to turn, the trees will be turning, it will be just absolutely beautiful. I'm told, because you'll find goshawks in on Great Ridge, or in Great Ridge rather, but that's sort of, you've got to wait really until sort of February time to stand any chance whatsoever of seeing goshawks. But I did see somebody post on Instagram, chap I've mentioned before, his Instagram sort of name is Notes from Pinnyland. Pinnyland is apparently sort of an old, I don't know if it's an old name for Wiltshire, but it's what maybe Wiltshire folk call Wiltshire. If you're on Instagram, go and find it, Notes from Pinnyland. It's Wayne Ford, I think his name is, isn't it? And he posted a short sort of audio track. Well, it was just a bit of video with an audio, and it was a goshawk in a wood. And quite rightly, he didn't say where it was. But, you know, to hear a goshawk this time of year is very unusual. But really distinctive sound. I mean, if you just look at Wayne's video and listen to that sound, you'll know exactly what to listen out for when you're in the woods. So they're around. Yeah. Perhaps they're just not vocal this time of year.
Yeah, yeah. I'll listen out for that. Mm. A report back.
Yes.
So, what have you been up to?
Well, I'm not sure if I mentioned it before, but I am in France. I am in the very north of Dordogne, where I think I have mentioned before we've had a house here for about 15 years. So we sort of got over here for the first time in 2 years, and sadly the two years of neglect and really bad rainfall this year has weighed heavily on the house. So opened the doors to a shed load of problems, water coming through the roof, you know, rising damp in one wall. I mean, the list just goes on and on. So I've spent 2 weeks so far just trying to fix problems. But we're getting there. And today, as I sit here, the sun is shining through a Velux window above my head. The blue skies, so everything's looking lovely. And I did hear a goshawk here last week, I think.
Oh, right.
But it has kind of got me thinking about when I went to the Northern Isles, to Shetland and Orkney earlier in the year. And when I got back, I was talking about sort of some of the similarities between the Northern Isles of Great Britain and Wiltshire. So, you know, the tumuli, the stone circles, the sort of prehistoric settlements, that sort of thing. And I was thinking about sort of where I am here. As I say, we're in the very, very northern tip of the Dordogne, so it's kind of granite landscape. In fact, you know, if I walk down the hill into the valley behind our house, it's the border with Charente, which is the next department over, and then a couple of miles, the other direction, we're into Haute-Vienne, if anybody knows where that is. But in this sort of region, there's no real there's very few similarities between here and Wiltshire and the Northern Isles in terms of sort of the prehistoric landscape. So, you know, there are no tumuli here. There are no real sort of signs of prehistoric settlements. No stone circles, that sort of thing. I mean, it's not to say they're not in France, but so in Charente that I mentioned just now, I mean, there are some dolmen there, you know, the sort of things that look like the Devil's Den on Fifield Down. The Romans, there's this heavy Roman presence around this area. I can never remember how you pronounce it, Saint or Sant, over to the west, which is in Charente, which is twinned with Salisbury. Fantastic Roman sort of amphitheatre there. And there's a huge Roman villa in a place called Rochechouart, which is to the north of us in Haute-Vienne. And then, of course, you know, further to the south in sort of you know, the Dordogne that everybody thinks of, which is quite some way to the south from here. You've got, you know, the caves, the cave art of, you know, Lasso, the caves down there, you know, where cavemen were here, you know, God knows how many tens of thousands of years ago. But just where we are, it bears no sort of resemblance at all to sort of the Wiltshire that we all know and love. It's similar in some ways in that it's, you know, it's heavily forested, quite deep valleys, got a lot of lakes around here, hell of a lot of lakes, and it's very green, so it's it does rain a lot here. So
yeah, it's funny because I know there are parts of France which, like you've already said, has got ancient history and historical sites. I know Brittany is absolutely chock full that, and obviously it has the Celtic link to, you know, the southwest of the UK. So it's,
that's right. Yeah,
but it's a huge country, though, isn't it?
It's
a lot of variety there.
Can't remember how many times the size of the UK is. Similar population, but it's a much bigger country.
It must be two or three times the size.
But we're off to Brittany on our way home. We've got some friends in some British friends who moved to Brittany a few years ago, and so they quite often sort of go out and post pictures of some of the especially the, you know, stone circles and avenues of stones. I mean, it's very famous for it in Brittany, and there's some stunning sort of prehistorical sites up that way. So we'll be stopping there.
Yeah, it's definitely
on my list.
It's on my list of places to visit, without a doubt.
Yeah, it is beautiful. It's very different to down here. But equally beautiful. I mean, it's you know, sound like I'm doing this place down. It's stunning, absolutely beautiful. You know, just very different to home, I guess.
Yeah. So speaking of home, shall we go on to this week's topic?
Yeah, here we go. Thank you. So the piece of music you've just heard is one of Steve's, of course, Steve Dixon, and that was called, I love it, absolutely beautiful piece of music called Hills Hiding Hangers, and anybody who heard him on the BBC Radio Wiltshire programme where he was featured, that's the piece of music that they used there. And it just makes me think about sort of Downland, Wiltshire Downland, was a major part of what we're about to talk about now, and the walk that Stu and I did a while ago.
Yeah, and actually the title of that music, Hills Hiding Hangers, for once I've actually been able to understand what one of his pieces of music, what the title actually means.
Yeah.
Because, of course, at the top of the hill outside Swindon by Rawton, there are quite a few hangers.
Yeah.
By an old airfield there. Rawton Airfield, I think it is.
That's right, and yeah, I mean it was that location that inspired him to write that piece.
Yeah.
Not sure there's any hangars around Knapdown in the Ebble Valley where we're going now.
You never know, though. You never know.
Absolutely. And of course, the other podcast we could have used that music for was Eddington, because of Turnip Airways, who do have a hangar.
Yeah, that is a hill there. Hiding a hangar.
Yeah, yeah. So. Anyway, enough already.
Yes. So what are you going to talk to us about this week then, Paul? Because this is one of yours, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So this is a walk that's on the website. It was posted. I posted it on the 2nd of September. And it's a walk that my walking buddy Stu and I did. I don't know, it must have been the end of August. I do remember it was a beautiful, hot, sunny day, and it was the walk is called Knapdown and the Ebble Valley. If you want to follow it along, there are two route maps on this one, unusually, mainly because there was it involves quite a long trudge along the old Salisbury to Shaftesbury Turnpike, whichever way you dress it up. It's difficult to make it sound attractive, and really we were trying to sort of shorten that length as much as possible, but it's a really useful stretch of track linking bits of which are parts of the walk which are far more interesting. So it's, you know, view it as an investment, but the bit that we did, I think we ended up walking about 4 kilometres or so along the track. So this second version of the route map that I put in, it's not the walk we did, but it's a shorter length of that track, so that's why you'll find two there. The walk that we did was about 10 miles in all, so I know it's sort of at the longer end of what we like to post. But it's one of those walks where we were sort of looking at the map, and I think when Stu first put it together, it came out at about 14 or 15 miles, which was just too long, and a very long stretch along the that old trackway. So we sort of sat and looked at the map, and we saw this open access area in the hills above Broadchalk. Called Knapdown, and that's one that completely passed me by. I'd never heard of it. Stu had never heard of it, but it looked like a really good way to sort of connect the hills to Broadchalk. So we decided to sort of plan a route that would take us through Knapdown, and my God, I'm glad we did. It was just beautiful. But anyway, more of that anon.
Just before you carry on, I mean, I have to confess that all these references over the last few months to your walking buddy Stu, I had a sneaking suspicion that he didn't exist and he was just your imaginary friend.
Yeah. I had a lot of those.
I actually met him.
Yeah. So he's your imaginary friend as well now.
Yeah, yeah. So I can confirm to all our listeners that Stu is real.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he'd be happy to come on the podcast, but he definitely exists.
Yeah, I did try and I did try and persuade him whilst I'm away in France. I did say to him once that, Stu, you do realise you're going to have to stand in for me. And I just got this withering look. But he's a man of few words. So Stu actually drove that day. And I say it was a beautiful sunny day. when we started off, it wasn't. It was forecast to be a beautiful sunny day, but it was raining. So I completely failed to bring any sort of waterproof gear on. Stu, being ex-army man, was equipped for all eventualities and had a waterproof. In fact, he had two waterproofs and he offered me one. But bearing in mind, Stu's about a foot taller than me. I declined. But when we set off, it was raining a little bit. Now, parking is a bit interesting here because we, as I said in the blog, we parked in a sort of little parking area by the school in Broadchalk. And I'm not sure we should have done. I think in hindsight, it's sort of maybe visitor parking for the school. But it was like the sort of back entrance of the school. It wasn't the main sort of way in. So I don't know. It wasn't a very big parking area. But during the walk, we found better places to park. So if you wanted to start and finish in Broadchalk, I would suggest the church. As I've said before, I quite often head for a church when I'm starting a walk because there's normally some sort of parking around there. And it's quite a big car park around the church at Broadchalk. Alternatively, there's a village hall in Broadchalk, which I think is okay to park. Now, another very good place is a bit further along the route at Bishopston, which is the next village along to the east of Broadchalk. And during the walk, we walked through Bishopston. And there's quite a big modern village hall there with a big sort of tarmac car park. And
right.
when we went there, as we sort of on route, we passed through it, a lady came past and we were sort of standing there looking at this car park and just checking it out and seeing if there's any private signs, which there weren't. And this lady came past and she said, "Oh, are you coming in for a coffee?" Beg your pardon?
that's an invitation.
Well, yes. Well, she was a lady of a certain age, so don't get too excited. But she was really nice, actually, very, very friendly. And she said, "Oh, no, we've got a coffee shop in the village hall here, and it's, you know, I'm just popping in there now. It's just opened up." So we had to sort of decline because we'd already just had a coffee en route. But we asked her about parking, and she said, "Oh, yeah, lots of people come and, you know, park here when they're doing walks around." In fact, she said, "We've got a walking club here in Bishopston, and, you know, we sort of people park here if they're driving in from anywhere." So it's, you know, you could park there as well.
Yeah.
But basically from Broadchalk, where we started, we followed the, because it's in the Ebble Valley, and we followed the river from Broadchalk heading towards Bishopston, and it's little more than a stream there. And I was going to say it's the river
Ebble,
but it's is it not the Nadder? No, the Nadder's north,
isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
The Ebble.
I something back in my mind said that there wasn't actually an Ebble, but there is. Yeah. Anyway, we followed the route of the Ebble, and you can see it on the map. But we pretty quickly came to a huge building site. It was just a massive building that was covered in scaffolding. And there's a picture of it on in the blog. And this was Knight and Mill, and it's completely covered in scaffolding. And the picture I took was from the front gate. Round the back, it's about 10 times the size. I can't overstate how big this place is, and sort of mill ponds, and you know, we couldn't really see because it had all been sort of fenced off, but it was a pretty substantial mill in its time, and it's obviously being sort of rebuilt or renovated. I think I read that the whole thing's been knocked down and being rebuilt, but some very wealthy property developers having it repurposed as his home. But Knight and Mill Pottery, which is apparently is quite well known and quite well regarded, I think that operated from there as well. From there, we sort of went past Knight and Manor, which is the pink house in the photographs on the website. But we were trying to sort of get back to, or we're trying to follow the river again, which, as I said, is pretty small and pretty narrow along there. So it sort of weaves its way in and out of gardens and things. So we're trying to get back alongside it, and we came to this after passing Knighton Manor and a couple of thatched cottages, I think. We came to sort of like there's a bungalow, and just the other side of the bungalow, looking east in the direction we want to travel, there was a big field of arable crop which had been harvested, so it was just stubble. And as far as we could see, the right of way looked like it was right across the field. So we sort of set off. And as we were going along, Stu sort of said, look to the left there. And it wasn't very far to the left, just, you know, a few metres. There was a path that ran between two sort of, you know, not even barbed wire, just wire fences. And he said, I reckon we should be on, you know, between those fences. I think that's where the path is. Yeah. And we met a lady walking her dog, and we asked her, and she said, yeah, the, you know, the path is between the two fences there. She said, but a lot of people miss the turn for it, and they end up doing what you're doing and walking in the field. But basically, there's the little bungalow. You basically walk around the edge of its garden. It's not very big, but instead of just carrying straight on past the bungalow, you kind of hang a left down another side of its garden, and then there's apparently there's a sign for the path to
right
that goes on to Bishopston. But you know, we weren't the first people to have done it. But you then get to. So this bungalow is in a sort of hamlet called Stoke Farthing. So we're going from Stoke Farthing to Croucherston, and that's where you're heading on the map. And eventually we reached we thought we'd gone wrong again, because there was again, there's a photograph of it. There's a little bridge over the Ebble, very sort of grand. Well, it's quite small, but it was it's got sort of like balustrades by the side of it, and there's a big sign saying private road to the cottage, but to the left of the bridge there is actually a little footpath, so don't be put off by that private sign. I'm basically saying you can't drive along it, but you can walk along it. It is a right of way. I can't remember if it's a footpath or a right of way. But basically, you go over that bridge or alongside of the bridge, you cross the Ebble, and then down what looks like somebody's drive. And it looks like somebody's drive because it is. And that's where we got to. It got even more sort of concerning. And we're looking at, there's on our right was just a garage, and on the left was an open metal gate, and this is where this dog sort of came bounding over to us. And you know how much I love dogs, Glyn. So that was a moment.
It's an endearing moment where, of course, you welcome this dog with open arms.
I did.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, how lovely!
Well, he was more interested in my crutch at that point. It's as dogs tend to do. So whilst his nose was up there, and I'm trying to sort of shoo him away, this lady appeared from the drive, and we thought, oh blimey, you know, we're in trouble now. We're on somebody's drive. But I sort of wrote a little piece about her. She was absolutely delightful. In fact, we couldn't shake her off. She spent so long chatting to us, and she was actually Kate. She came out looking for the dog. So the dog had sort of was wandering up the drive, and then and was more attracted by what was between my legs, and that was so I managed to detain him. As I said in the blog, it turned out, you know, it's one of these things that I was saying about, you know, you're never more than six persons removed from everybody else in the world. And it turned out that this lady Wendy worked with one of my oldest friends, who I also walk with from time to time. In fact, when I did the Fonthill Abbey walk, I did that walk with not Stu but this friend Julia. Anyway, Wendy turned out she works with Julia at a school. So you know, what's the chances of that, meeting somebody in the middle of nowhere who knows one of your best mates? But she sort of directed us kind of up her drive, but just before you sort of go into, you know, the grounds of her, into her garden proper, there's like a little branch off to the right where the path squeezes between her hedge and another lovely old house next door, which was, there's a little old lady who lives in there apparently. So basically you're kind of squeezing between the two houses. And then you sort of, it opens out a little bit, but it's just the most beautiful scene. I mean, you've got the Ebble, which splits into a couple of channels there. So you're almost on like an island in between the two channels. And there was sort of weeping willows hanging over the river. The sun was out by this time. And so there's all this sort of dappled sunlight. And to your right, you've got all these just beautiful houses, great long sweeping gardens that come down to the river. And it was just stunning. And I mean, Stu, as I've mentioned before, he's a keen fisherman. So he was sort of, you know, really interested in this spot. I mean, it's all private fishing. And in fact, as we sort of walked on a few hundred metres along this sort of little island, there was what looks like a trout fishery or something. You pass that. And of course, by now, you're getting sort of towards Bishopston, I think. But we sort of we kind of stopped here, and this is where we had our coffee before we got to Bishopston Hall, a village hall. And we were sort of sitting there chatting and trying to sort of... we'd already plotted the route, but there's lots of different options through there. There's footpaths, and then there's lanes, tiny lanes. And basically, you're just trying to get to the other side of Bishopston and sort of hooking up with... a lane, pit lane, that's where we were heading for, P-I-T-T, pit lane. So we were trying to get to pit lane, and you can find your way there, whatever way you like. There's all sorts of options. It's not a big place, so you're not going to get lost. But pit lane is almost the last street in Bishopston.
Is that the place, is that near what's marked on the map as something called the Pits?
Yes, I think so.
The Pits.
It was the Pits.
Doesn't sound too hopeful, does it?
No.
The Pits. It's the Pits.
Yeah, this walk is the Pits. I'm just scrolling down to the map. What I do remember is because you're now basically what you're doing is crossing the main road that runs along the Ebble Valley. I say main road, it's just a little lane.
Yes,
that's right, the Pits, I've got it, with the telephone box sign, and there is indeed a telephone box there. So that's where you cross the road. And basically what you're going to do is just strike due north, straight up the hillside. And there's a couple of options. There's two or three sort of routes that take you all the way up the hill, up to the ridge, up to the old turnpike. So that's where you're heading. So we basically took the furthest one east, which just really pretty much a straight line. I think it was we were on the edge of a field, and there were some trees on our right, and we just sort of trudged up. But because it was, you know, the sun was out and there was just some sort of scudding clouds. The views, again, as we were saying in the last podcast, sometimes the best view is the one behind you. And you sort of turn around and look behind. And again, I've sort of posted a picture of the sort of Ebble Valley, you know, to the south side of the valley, which was opening up as we climbed to the north. Absolutely beautiful. And it was a little bit of a trudge up there, but because of the views are opening up, and of course you could start to see more to the east and the west as you went up as well. All the time, the views were sort of changing and developing. And there's loads of, you know, buzzards and red kites up there. But at the top, there was. I was going to take. I think if I'd been on my own, I'd have taken some photographs of it, and I don't think I'd have published them on the website. But it's the sort of thing that I quite like photographing. Is sort of like rural detritus. I mean, I love old farming machinery and, you know, falling down buildings, old barns and dilapidated barns and things. But there were two caravans up there, parked at the side of the right of way, and they were pretty. Pretty tatty, and I described it as fly tipping, and they looked almost as though they'd been fly tipped. It was only because Stu spotted a cat in the window of one of them that we thought, well, there's somebody living up here. But I got to say, it was, they'd made a hell of a mess. and you know, one of my little rants in the blog that, you know, why do people, especially when you sort of live in there, I mean, they literally have trashed their doorstep. And there was just stuff all littered around the caravans. But just behind them, just the other side of them, you then hit the, you know, the old turnpike road, and this is where, you know, becomes a bit, well, I don't know, depends on your point of view, it can get a bit monotonous. You know, a mile or so of the old turnpike would be very interesting, but, you know, or kilometre, but we, as I said, we did, I think our stretch was about 4 kilometres, so we just sort of, we set off, and that's where, you know, having a bit of company was quite useful. You know, past the time of day, and the time soon sort of flew by as we were chatting away.
But that is that's quite an old road, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one
it
of these
stretches all the way to Shaftesbury, I think.
It does, yeah. Well, this stretch does, so it links Salisbury and Shaftesbury, and it's the one that passes Salisbury Racecourse.
Yeah.
If you've ever driven past a racecourse and over the top of the hill and down the other side to Coombisset, that way, then there's a really sharp left-hand bend as you pass the racecourse, and there's a sort of parking area there, and that takes you onto the same track.
Yeah,
but it is a byway, so you know I've seen you know motorbikes and off-roaders up there. In fact, when I did the walk that I did from Ebsbourne Wake and around there, I was on the same track, but further along to the west. Whilst, you know, because it was so dry when we went up, it was pretty firm. Well, it was very firm underfoot. I know it does get a bit of a quagmire in the winter.
But it seems to follow the path of the more modern A30, which is down in the valley.
Yes, it's parallel.
On the other side. Parallel, yeah. So originally this was the main road.
Yes.
Many years ago.
Yeah, so it was, as I said, it was turnpiked. And a bit later on you get to a point, I mean, basically what we were doing, we were heading to Chiselbury Camp, you know, the hill fort, and, you know, on the slopes just the other side of Chiselbury to the north of the Fovent Badges. So that's where we were aiming for. And just by the entrance to Chiselbury, there is the, I mean, there's no sign of it now, but there used to be a like a toll house there, a toll gate. But what we do, just to break up the monotony of that track, and I, you know, it's not as bad as it sounds because you're between double hedges, you know, there's a hedge either side. Again, that I think signifies the importance. I think David Dawson at Wiltshire Museum mentioned this once, that where you find a trackway like that between double hedges, as he said, you know, why would they, you know, and yes, you're looking at the modern hedges, but they'd have been, you know, hedgerow could have been there for hundreds of years.
Yep.
Why would they go to the expense of planting, you know, double hedges if it was just, you know, a rarely used trackway? So you've got double hedges all the way along, but every now and then the kind of view breaks. You know, there's a gap in the hedgerow, and you can look across a field, and you know, away across the Ebble Valley to the south. So there are great views up there from time to time. But we got to a point where there's a junction of tracks, and on the map, you can see Flamstone Farm and Netton Down to the south, and then to the right, it's marked as Hoopside, which is a curious name, not quite sure the origins of that. But we had a little sort of wander down that track to the north, because you can see on there's a number of tumuli marked along there.
Yeah.
So we thought we'd go and have a look and see if we could see anything, but you know, there's no sign of anything. And you've got a sort of trig point off to the right. There's a height marker on the map, 181 metres. So that's where we were. I mean, it was just a little diversion. Only took 15 minutes. You did get great views further west along towards Chiselbury. You could see Chiselbury off in the distance. But no sign of the tumuli that I marked there.
I notice on the map around there, there's quite a few pits marked on the map.
Mm.
Disused.
Yeah, they've been chalk pits. So they'd have dug chalk up there. But yeah, we see those all over the place in Wiltshire. So again, continuing on and to our right on the map, you've got Burkham Ivers, which again, curious name. I'd love to know the derivation of some of these names.
The names are fantastic. If you look on the map, you can have a lot of fun with these names. Stoke Bushes.
Yeah. They all mean something. They're called that for a reason. You could spend a lifetime researching that. Hut Bottom. Anyway, we eventually got to. There are some junctions of tracks and quite major junctions. So there's a lot of routes, as you would imagine. From it being such an important trackway in its time, there's a lot of routes come up from either side of the ridge and join this trackway. So you can imagine that people came from sort of hamlets or villages down in the valleys up to the turnpike or the ancient trackway before it was turnpiked, and then the major sort of effort involved in covering miles would have been along that ridge. So we then come on to Compton Down, what's called Compton Down on the map, and we're sort of pretty much just north of Broadchalk now. So we've gone sort of almost in a sort of big circle, having started at Broadchalk earlier on in the day. Do go and look at Chiselbury. It's a big hillfort, isn't it?
It is a big one. It looks like a sort of animal enclosure, I'd say.
Yeah, it's a univallet, so it's just a single earthwork and ditch. Huge area inside it. So we basically just walked round, I think, half of the perimeter up on the bank. And when we went, it was still covered in, just the wildflowers up there were stunning.
Yeah, you get views from up there all the way over the other valleys in the distance, the Nadder.
Nadder, yeah.
You can see all the way over to Dinton.
That's absolutely right, yeah.
You can see Phillip's House. That was in the news this week, I saw Phillip's House.
Phillip's House?
Yeah, that's the big mansion house in the distance that's part of Dinton Park.
Oh, right.
It's owned by the National Trust.
Yeah.
And the National Trust, in their wisdom, have decided that they're going to rent the house out to a tenant. And as part of the rental, they're basically fencing off 30 acres of the land to be part of the garden of the house. And all the locals that go walking there are thinking, well, National Trust, you're just depriving us of our land that we walk on a regular basis.
Well, this is tantamount to enclosing the land, isn't it? This is back to the Enclosure Acts.
Yep, so people are now questioning the National Trust, what is your purpose? Why are you here and why are you doing this? In a way, you're excluding the public from, this land that you own.
Yeah, and that's in part what they were created to do, was to safeguard these areas. That's not good. So we walked around the sort of the western perimeter and just to see if we could see anything of the Fovent badges. And I mean, from above, obviously, there's nothing to see. It's just a bit of a chalk patch. You have to be to the north to get the full views. But that's not why we went there. It was just to, walk along that ridge line and go to Chiselbury.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's interested in the Fovent badges, if you go to the Hidden Wiltshire website and do a search on Fovent, I've got some pretty good pictures of the badges with a drone. So it's quite an impressive set of things to see, but you can't really appreciate them from there, from the top.
No, no.
You'd have to be down on the A30 and looking up.
Yeah, and there are. I mean, there's this. Where Fovent badges is that sort of escarpment. I mean, it's really steep, which is obviously why they're there. So some of the roads up there, I've cycled up from Fovent itself up one of those ridges, and my God, that's a lung buster on a bike. you use every single gear you've got, I don't know why I do it. It was awful. But from there, so when we got to Chiselbury, before we sort of went into the camp, you've got to your left, looking south, you can see Knapdown. And you're looking down into it, and the sort of top end of Knapdown, and, you know, this is bottoms galore here. You're just looking into these deep combes, and we were trying to spot a way to get onto the open access land. So the open access, Knapdown is open access, and it abuts right up to the old turnpike. But there didn't seem to be a gate or anything into the open access land. Back the way we'd come, we'd noticed one of these sort of like a horse jump where they'd put like a couple of you know, wooden poles across the fence, and it's obviously designed for somebody to jump over, you know, on horseback. So we thought, well, do we go back there? Although we had spotted there was a strand of barbed wire on top, but right in front of us, as you come out through the gate from Chiselbury, if you've had a walk in there, and you come through a gate right in front of you. I mean, it is a wire fence, but it had been pushed down, and clearly a lot of people enter Knapdown from up there.
Yeah.
I mean, there are other sort of better ways elsewhere, but I think, you know, it's what people do. They find the most direct and convenient route from A to B, and I think a lot of people have done that. You could head further along the turnpike to the west, and there is looks like a bridleway or footpath that sort of heads down and skirts the edge of Knapdown, but it doesn't actually take you into it. So we did that. We didn't have to touch the fence, we just stepped over the bit that had been pushed down, and sort of descended towards, on the 1 to 25,000 map is marked as Sheepwash. So we descended the coombe there, and it's the head of the coombe is really, really steep. I mean, if you've got dodgy knees, then take some sticks, because you know, Stu and I are pretty fit, but you know, it was hard work for us as well.
Yeah.
So we sort of zigzagged our way down. In fact, it reminded me of what's it called? The bottom above Eddington, where the Bloodstone is.
Luckham.
Yeah, it reminded me of that, where you've got that sort of that first part of descending into Luckham is very steep.
Yeah.
It even looks similar sort of outlook. So we sort of, you know, we dropped down into the coombe, into the bottom there, and just basically followed the coombe bottom all the way down to Sheepwash. And as you get there, it was absolutely, you know, I can't overstate how beautiful it is there. It's so peaceful. You're a long way from the road down in the valley, and sort of over your right shoulder, looking back up, there's another sort of coombe which is called Gersten Holes. I mean, again, another really bizarre name. Where does that come from? So you're looking back up there, and Stu summed it up because he sort of, you know, stationed in Germany for years when he was in the army, and you know, all over Europe, and he said it looks like the Alps, and it could have been. In fact, Gersten Holes, there was a sort of a building there, which, you know, the what we call the man cave up above the Deverells, that black building.
Yeah.
It was similar to that. So whether it's another shooting lodge or I don't know, but it was just a little bit further up the coombe. So I think next time I go back, I'll go and have a look at that. So you're still in the open access land. You're not trespassing or anything. You're perfectly at liberty to wander around there. So we kind of followed Knapdown, and we were hoping to follow Knapdown all the way down to what, just outside Broadchalk. It's called Chalk Pit Farm.
Yeah.
Pit spelt with PYT. And it looks like on the 1 to 25,000 map that you can follow the open access land, and there's quite narrow pinch points, but you're in open access land all the way down to just outside Chalk Pit Farm. But we thought, well, what if we can't, what if we get all the way down there and we can't get to the farm? So what we did was we sort of followed the coombe down from Sheepwash, and it's quite a broad coombe, and you you're approaching what's on the maps called Poor Patch. There's a woodland called Poor Patch. And just before then, just to the west of that, leading up to your right, you'll see a chalk track. And it heads away basically to your right, uphill, so to the sort of southeast. And it sort of it disappears around a bend. And we could see that joined up with a footpath, and the footpath that I'd mentioned before that comes down from the turnpike. So we thought, well, you know, better to be safe than sorry. It was a long walk. We don't want to have to sort of retrace our steps for a mile or two. We'll head on off that track. You know, you're on open access land, so you're not trespassing. You're perfectly liberty to go up that track. And then basically at the top is a gate which brings you out to the footpath, and it's a junction of two footpaths. And again, beautiful spot. It's there's a height mark there on the map, 146 metres. Beautiful views from up there, absolutely stunning. In fact, we just sort of collapsed in the grass. It was really hot by then, and we sort of finished off our coffees and just spent some time sort of lying in the grass there. So again, I think I took a photograph or two up there, which you'll see on the walk description. And from there, it was just a question of really following the footpath. Actually, it's a bridle way. It's a bridle way, not a footpath. Down to Chalk Pit Farm, and you sort of tips you out to Chalk Pit Farm. And there's some barns. First of all, before you get to the farm itself, or the farmhouse, there's some barns just on your left, and you could see where the open access land came down, and it did stop just short of the barns, and there were private signs everywhere. So clearly they don't want people using the open access land all the way down to the bottom. And right. It's a tiny gap, but it's wide enough for them to say, you're not on open access land anymore, you're not on a footpath, it's private.
Yeah.
So it was a good call, sort of using the track that we did.
Yeah, looking at the map, the open access land, it literally comes down into a property.
Yeah.
You can see, and there's a gap between
exactly.
the open access land and the path. So obviously the people on the property are thinking, don't use this as a shortcut through our garden.
And you know, it's to be honest, I think that last bit that leads down to Chalk Pit Farm is, you can see it's marked as sort of like woodland on the map. And again, open access, but it looked pretty scrubby, and I should imagine that bit is probably quite heavy going.
Yeah.
And you're back up on the slopes of the coombe, you know, the bottom. So you're not down in the coombe. So ideally, you'd want to follow the coombe bottom all the way down. You know, you get good views of it from above following that bridle way. And the bridle way was, you know, it was pretty easy going. Places are a little bit overgrown, but, you know, horse riders use it. You could see that.
Yeah.
And then we're sort of just into the village. And, of course, on the 1 to 25,000 map, the little pint glass symbol caught our eye. So we thought, I wonder if we might pass the pub. And sure enough, we did. And better still, the pub was open. Because we were blooming hot by this point. And, you know, the thought of a pint was very tantalising. So to find that pub open, I think it's called I'm just scrolling down my blog, my walk description. It's Queen's Head, isn't it? In Broadchalk. Some really great beers in there. You know, well worth a visit. Landlord was a funny old bugger. In fact, my optician knows him because he drinks in there, and I think his son works in the pub. But he can come across as a bit of a funny old bugger, but apparently he's a nice bloke. And he's sort of, I think his daughter was in there. In fact, his daughter sent him to bed when we were in there. It was the middle of the afternoon. She said, Dad, shut up and go and have your nap. She shooed him away, and she was delightful. I think the food is supposed to be very good in there, and they do accommodation because there was some quite well-heeled individuals in the bar there. They were staying there. But, yeah, absolutely beautiful. And there we just sort of, you know, you go back to the car, wherever you've left it. Just over the road from the pub opposite is a lane that leads up to the church, to All Saints Church. So if you park your car there, that's really convenient. Otherwise, you know, if you started from Bishopston, you know, it's a couple of miles, if that, mile and a half back along the valley to get to Bishopston and the village hall there. But yes, absolutely super walk. Actually, one other thing about the pub, which I hadn't realised, I put a photograph of a pint on the table in front of me on the site, and that particular pint I had, because Stu was driving, so I had a couple. It was called Keystone, which was a local brewery. But I also had a pint of something called Gritchy, which I'd never heard of before.
Oh.
And that was the first one I had. It was lovely, really super beer. And I found out afterwards that Gritchy is G. Ritchie, as in Guy Ritchie, Madonna's ex-husband, who lives not far away, just a little bit further to the west, just over the border. Yeah. So I think it's a Dorset beer. I think it's just brewed just into Dorset on the border with, because you're right down on the Dorset border down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but thoroughly recommend his beer. It was fantastic.
Very good.
So, yeah, that was it.
Okay. So, yeah, sounds interesting. I mean, one thing that was interesting for me is the actual area of Knapdown is a place that I've seen but never explored. I remember when I was up at the Fovent Badges with my drone, I turned the drone around and took this aerial shot of Knapdown and that valley and the bottoms, and I just thought, ooh, that looks rather nice. Must come back here and visit. And you've beat me to it.
Well, I thought you'd put your drone up over there.
Yeah, I have.
Over Knapdown?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought you said that you had some pictures of Knapdown.
Yeah. But it was accidental. I was above Chiselbury Camp.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just turned the drone around.
Yeah.
So I was focusing on Fovent, but I turned the drone around and looked behind and thought, blimey, that looks amazing. Yeah. And then I walked down onto the track and stood at the fence and just looked at the whole area and thought, wow, really picturesque.
And not knowing really what you were looking at.
No, at all.
Oh, well, if you had to do it, go there. Absolutely beautiful.
So I guess we can wrap up this week's podcast.
Yeah.
Usual thanks.
Usual thanks. First on the list, Steve Dixon, as ever. So that piece before the our chat about the walk is called Hills Hiding Hangers. We've got to thank Lower Boots for their continued support by the offering a discount code. So go to the Lower Boots website, lower.co.uk, and stick in the discount code at checkout, HW20 for a 20% discount. Go to the website for show notes, because we always put links in there. I do wonder whether anybody actually looks at those show notes, but they're a useful source of information.
They are. I mean, I don't know whether many people read them. I know that they get pushed out to the podcasting apps and stuff, so you can read them on, you know, if you're following on Apple, you can look at them. But I put them on the website as well, and they're just a useful reference point.
Yeah.
If you're ever listening along and you want to actually dive into a bit more detail about the links to things that we're talking about and stuff like that, they're a good resource. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly save sort of searching for stuff. You just pop in there and click the link.
Yeah.
And of course the website also contains the online shop if you want to spend a few quid in there.
Yeah, that's always helps us keep the lights on. I'll rejig that shop before Christmas, so when we get the book up and the rest of it, make it a bit more focused. But yeah, it really does help us keep this thing moving and paying the bills.
Yeah. Actually, what we didn't say at the beginning was that this is episode 21.
And, I've lost count now.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was reading just yesterday that somebody said that if you're if you record podcasts, if you get past 7 episodes, you can consider yourself a podcaster. And we've done 3 times more than that. So we're definitely podcasters.
Well, you know, I mean, it's funny, when I started this at the start of the year, I thought, right, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it properly. So here we are. Even though you're on holiday in the middle of France, we're still keeping the schedule every 2 weeks.
Soldiering on, yeah. But having said that, we've got absolutely no idea what we're going to talk about in 2 weeks' time.
We'll work it out. We'll work it out.
Yeah, we've got some ideas, but yeah, in 2 weeks, in 2 weeks' time, that egg will have been laid.
Yes, it'll be, so it's a mystery podcast next time round. So tune in.
Yeah.
But until then, I guess we can say goodbye.